Welcome into the show. Today we discuss universal childcare in our region. You're listening to And Another Thing. I'm Derek Kennedy. As cities and states address the multitude of challenges on the downside of the pandemic, lawmakers and political hopefuls are devising plans for working families.
I'm Maya Schwader. The pandemic has spurred a new push, for example, from President Biden's administration to institute universal pre-K. But this evening, we'll hear from advocates who think that's not actually the answer. If you want to join our conversations, reach us at andanotherthing@nepm.org or across social media platforms at @HelloAndAnother.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Derek Kennedy. Childcare in the United States can be costly. According to an Economic Policy Institute on Childcare Employment Report, families regularly pay over $11,000 to send an infant to a childcare center. In April, President Biden announced his American Families Plan to help ease the burden of care with tax credits, paid family leave, and access to free universal pre-K. Across the country and right here in our area, variations of the AFA are being structured to address the challenges families face.
I'm Maya Schwader. Today, Massachusetts Lieutenant Governor Karen Polito announced that the state would be prioritizing a new set of childcare initiatives, all based on the Baker administration's Future of Work report.
The report also concludes that greater flexibility in childcare will be crucial to meeting the changing needs of working families and employers. As employers and workers leverage technology to provide greater flexibility for work habits, childcare needs will change as well. Our administration is working with the early education community to make improvements to the childcare system to respond to these trends. We are investing over $640 million in federal funding for childcare, focusing on building capacity at early education providers and targeting funds to the greatest areas of need according to the Social Vulnerability Index. We are also sustaining increased childcare subsidies for low-income families and other pandemic-era changes that expand access to care. We also know that we have challenges related to our childcare workforce. And to that end, we are leveraging the Commonwealth's workforce development programs to develop a stable pipeline of early educators to expand access to affordable childcare.
Currently, one of three Democrats running to be the next governor of Massachusetts, former state Senator Ben Downing recalls that the state has the highest childcare cost in the country, making it unaffordable for 95% of families. He has launched the Downing Child Care Plan based on a bill developed by the Common Start Coalition. One day after the plan's launched, we asked him here on And Another Thing why his plan works.
One of the priorities, and that's why we rolled it out here early, one of the priorities for funding through the Fair Share Amendment, through our tax plan, right? So that will be there in the first part. The Child Care Plan has several key provisions. The idea would be that first we support the existing child care centers across the state, because they've been hammered throughout the pandemic. They were barely operating on a shoestring before it. And for, you know, effectively the existence of early education and care in Massachusetts and in this country, we've asked them to operate like businesses. And, you know, what that leads to is higher and higher costs and the inability to pay their workers the wages they need and limited amounts of seats. So we have multiple communities in Massachusetts where there are three kids for every one seat in a childcare center. So the idea would be first support the centers, dedicated support for capacity building at the centers. The second is to cap childcare costs at 7% of income for anyone, anywhere in Massachusetts. And then finally, it's that childcare, early education and care would be free for anyone making 50% of the state median wage or below. And again, the way you are able to make those investments is through the Fair Share Amendment. And you know, when you look at Massachusetts, 95% of residents of Massachusetts, childcare is too expensive for them based on the federal designation. The average cost of childcare in Massachusetts is higher than anywhere else in the country. It's quoted as being $21,000 a year on average. And everyone I talk to, and I know from our own experience, that seems low. That seems really low. I don't know how that's the average for costs based on what we've seen around here. And I think that's true across the state. And we can't talk about reopening the economy if people can't actually get to work. Their kids need care. Final point, I could go on this, right? But these are the most important years of a kid's life, 0 to 5. And yet the state doesn't invest like it. So we talk about achievement gaps in school, but if we made the investment upfront in early education and care, then those achievement gaps are far smaller than we get there. So you invest to recognize the value of the work, a workforce that is predominantly women, 98% women, early education and care providers, right? And then predominantly women of color, 40% are women of color, right? We can't have them living in poverty while they are doing this critical work. And you talk to every one of these centers, they're losing talented workers who want to do the work, who want to be early education providers, but can't afford to send their own kids to where they work. So that's the plan. If the Fair Share Amendment doesn't move forward, I will have my own comprehensive tax reform plan that will be a part of the campaign's policy platform and proposal. What has come to define Massachusetts, if you look at it on the aggregate, you might say, well, Massachusetts is doing pretty well. But as you drill down, you see there are these massive inequities from one community to the next, from one region to the next. There are gender inequities, racial inequities, generational inequities. And the only way that we change that is to ask more from those who have benefited from the policy of the last 3 decades to make an investment so that we don't repeat that for another 3 generations beyond that. And so, yes, that's going to require an investment, and that will allow us to eliminate child poverty and hunger. That will allow us to have universal childcare. That will allow us to have debt-free higher education. Those should be the building blocks of a fairer, stronger Massachusetts, and one that creates prosperity in all 351 cities and towns, not in a few select ones.
That was Democratic candidate for governor Ben Downing detailing his universal childcare plan. And before that, we heard from Lieutenant Governor Karen Polito announcing the state's new child care funding as part of the Biden administration's American Rescue Plan.
Not everyone thinks those plans are a great idea. Carrie McDonald, a Cambridge, Massachusetts-based senior education fellow at the Foundation for Economic Education and author of Unschooled, Raising Curious, Well-Educated Children Outside the Conventional Classroom, tells us that cities are pushing small daycares out of business, and she joins us now.
It's great to be with you, Dara. You know, the Chicago Tribune just last week had an in-depth article showing how the city's expansion of, in particular, universal preschool programs was leading to the death and destruction of small daycares, particularly because in many cases, these small preschools and early childhood care providers rely on the income from these four-year-olds, in some cases three-year-olds, to kind of offset the high cost of the infant and toddler care. And as more and more parents, you know, sort of chose the quote-unquote free option of the government preschool program, these early childhood providers were really being pushed out. They couldn't cover their costs, and it creates more shortages in the child care space. In fact, one advocate that they interviewed said this will create, you know, childcare deserts in the infant and toddler space, which of course will drive up costs and lead to many more frustrations of parents, and then has this sort of snowballing effect to, you know, call for more government intervention to fix a problem that really, in essence, the government created with its own programs.
You also recently wrote that it is hard for enterprising individuals to compete with widespread free, i.e. taxpayer-funded, government offerings. You also added that women and people of color are most impacted. Can you explain what you meant by that?
You're right that it is impacting women and people of color more disproportionately because they're often the ones that are providing these early childhood care services in their homes or in small commercial spaces. And now it's difficult for them to compete with the, again, taxpayer-funded, quote-unquote, free government child care options, whether it's child care subsidy programs that are being proposed in this state or universal preschool programs that are, again, either being implemented at the state or city level or proposed at the federal level. And so then these small businesses really are having a hard time competing with that option that parents say, gosh, you know, even though this private local childcare provider is probably a better educational fit for my kid, or I really feel there's this personal touch, the fact is I have to pay out of pocket for that when I could send them to this government program that's free, though it may not be as high quality. And it just puts parents in a pickle and then ends up leading to these small businesses, daycare providers going out of business.
Let's stay in state here. The Baker-Polito administration today released the Future of Work report, which is taking a series of actions for childcare improvements. Lieutenant Governor Karen Polito laid out just this morning that the state will invest over $640 million in federal funding for childcare and will sustain increased childcare subsidies for low-income families. What are your thoughts on what the state's plan is going forward?
Yeah, I think these are still big government solutions, and that we need to get away from that. We need to really focus on decentralized solutions to various market problems or difficulties that families may have, and look at the ways in which that government intervention or big government policies have actually exacerbated the problems. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, for example, did a survey of childcare providers. And they found that between 2005 and 2017, the number of small in-home family childcare centers actually dropped by 48%. And these childcare providers cited increased regulations as a reason. So again, the solution is staring us right in the face. It's repealing a lot of these regulations that have been implemented. I mean, you look even in the state, if you wanted to provide, you know, in-home care for some of your neighbors or friends or people in your local community, there are lots of hoops that you have to jump through. You have a limited number of kids you can have in your home, including your own kids. And then you have to go through all of these requirements to get licensed. And of course, if you have a commercial space, it's even more so. And with these additional layers of occupational licensing requirements and certifications and now degree requirements that are coming down in a lot of cases, it just adds to the complexity and the barriers to entry for small business owners. But it creates these problems for that neighbor to provide this care because they have to meet all of these regulations just to allow people to engage in sort of free exchange and voluntary exchange and association to find the childcare solutions and other sorts of care and home solutions that are right for them.
In your opinion, has anyone gotten this right yet? Is there a plan or maybe a city or state that you've recognized and you said, oh, they're on the right path. This should be taken to a larger level. This works.
Oh, what a great question. I think, unfortunately, you know, many cities and states are sort of moving in the direction of more big government policies and expanding government preschool programs and now moving into the early child care space. So I think the key is just to stop that additional layering of big government policies that is occurring in all kinds of cities and states across the country and go back to allowing for a much more decentralized free market approach.
Up next, a local child care executive is recognized as one of this year's Commonwealth heroines, and we hear from her next. You're listening to And Another Thing. Stay with us.
College can be a step up the economic ladder, but nobody says you got to do college like everybody else. Going off script on campus. Next time on Marketplace.
Marketplace is ahead at 6:30, followed by Fresh Air at 7 and Jazz a la Mode at 8 on New England Public Media. And Another Thing on NEPM is funded by you. By Amherst Laser and Skin Care Center with Dr. Bob Weitzman, offering laser and aesthetic services for face and body since 2004. AmherstLaser.com. And by Greenfield Auto Specialists, offering sales and service on all models and years of Volvos with a factory-certified Volvo technician on site. GreenfieldAutoSpecialists.com. Cloudy tonight with a chance of showers. We'll have patchy fog overnight as well with lows in the mid-60s. Mostly cloudy tomorrow with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs in the lower 80s.
Welcome back to the show. Today on And Another Thing, we're talking about the question of universal child care. During the pandemic, families struggled to balance work while also taking care of their children, and there were very few options for support outside the home. Right here in Western Mass, the Gladys Allen Brigham Community Center in Pittsfield was one of only a handful of emergency child care centers open during the pandemic. For their efforts, the center's CEO, Kelly Marion, is being honored tonight as a Commonwealth Heroine, an award for women making a difference in Massachusetts. We spoke to Marion before the ceremony about what this meant to her.
You know, I'm always funny about recognition because I feel like I don't stand alone as the head of the organization. I'm part of a bigger team and we all work together. But having done this work for as long as I have, it felt really good. I was super proud. My kids were proud. My parents were proud.
Without hesitation, Marion recognized the efforts her staff made to return to work once they shifted to an emergency childcare center. Her wish is that the state would also recognize those efforts with more funding.
We are half sort of subsidy parents and half private pay parents. And I think the biggest thing I've seen in my time here and looking at moving forward is really it's the access to subsidized care. You want to do better, but childcare is not affordable. You know, here in Western Mass, for an infant to be here full time, it's $63 a day. That's $315 a week. And I think that that's, you know, really difficult if you're not in a position where you're in a really high paying job with good benefits.
Marion, however, does not see universal early childcare as the best answer. For programs like hers, which is a mix of private pay and subsidized families, she says universal early childcare actually makes things more complicated.
For our parents, it's really hard every time we have to increase our rate for our subsidized slots. We have to increase our rate for private pay parents. And that's really difficult for them because they feel like, geez, you know, every time the state's able to help you more, we have to pay a higher fee. The question for me is always really more about access. And, you know, parents can be on a wait list for a voucher or a contracted slot for, you know, they could go put themselves on when they first find out they're going to have a baby. And sometimes we don't have a space until they're two. And that's an awful long time to put your life on hold when you really want to get into the workforce or you want to, you know, go to college to get a degree, to be an RN maybe, or a physical therapist, or, you know, want to work in the police department, the fire department. There's so many opportunities, but in order for you parents to access those, they have to have a safe and secure place to have their children.
The Massachusetts Commission on the Status of Women notes that the Commonwealth heroines are women who don't make the news, but make the difference. Marion Kelly was recognized as part of the state organization's 18th annual class.
We've heard today about some of the problems and solutions around childcare that are being bandied about in Massachusetts. Elsewhere in our region, many states are taking new initiatives. The governor of Maine just signed a bill to expand childcare access, and Rhode Island's 2022 budget includes a new $3.6 million for childcare subsidies. Over in Connecticut, we spoke with Dr. Lauren Ruth of Connecticut Voices for Children. She's one of the authors of an annual report on the state of childcare in Connecticut. And we asked her, as an expert who's studied these problems before and during the pandemic, what's her recommendation?
We are advocating for a system of universal access to affordable care in Connecticut. To our knowledge, this is not something that any states do yet. It is something that Canada is striving for. We do know that our neighbors in New York have figured out a way to make pre-K accessible to all children. We also know that this is a proposal that President Biden's administration has put forth on the national level. And that goes a really long way to helping make sure that kids are ready to enter school. But this still means that a lot of mothers who might otherwise choose to stay involved in the workplace, also fathers, are in some cases forced to exit being able to work full time or to rely on care that may not be regulated for their children. There's just this trade-off for parents on, does it make sense for me to work if I'm paying this much for childcare or if it's not available? And right now, at least, it's looking like on a national level, states that don't have very accessible and affordable childcare, a lot of parents are saying that it still doesn't make sense to get back into the workplace full time. I do think that to the extent that we can try and move forward on opening up childcare for parents through a model like what President Biden has suggested. That's going to go a long way, but it's not the full answer. We need to pay attention to infants and toddlers as well as to preschoolers.
You said that you're advocating for universal access. What is the difference between universal access and something like universal pre-K?
So Connecticut has a system of early care that is a combination of public and private operators. The family child care homes tend to be privately run, but they're licensed, accredited, overseen by state regulations. We also have preschool that is run as part of schools, more general public schools, and we have more public programs, but it's this combination of private and public providers that I think, and research in many cases shows as a strength because it provides a lot more flexibility for families to get care when they need it, rather than being beholden to the hours that a school is open. It allows families to find providers that look like them and feel like their kids are at home, as opposed to whoever the teacher in the area happens to be, you know, whoever is assigned to your child. So there's a lot of real benefit in having this system that utilizes both public and private spaces. And so a system of universal access allows for parents to choose where they want their children to attend and who's able to best meet the needs of their families, rather than being a standardized model in the way that a universal pre-K would be, of where pre-K is offered through the school system. There have been a number of countries that have made use of both models, but given where we are in Connecticut, a system of universal access to care makes the most sense based on who our providers are and the needs of our community. Given the growing diversity of Connecticut's demographics, as well as the really drastic socioeconomic polls that we have in the state, you know, families are going to need or want different things. And in order to provide really high quality care to our families that have the least and really deserve a good quality education for their children while potentially working non-9-to-5 hours, we need this more flexible system. Right now we have in Connecticut a government subsidized voucher for families that earn 50% or less of the median income in their area. And those vouchers can be used wherever parents choose to use them that accepts the vouchers. So that our Care for Kids voucher, it's a very, very, very flexible solution. Unfortunately, right now, the rates are still too low, which helps or starts to perpetuate the issues like we see with the family child care homes who rely almost exclusively on Care for Kids. They're struggling to make their ends meet.
Is it possible that in a system of universal access or in a system where there is some sort of subsidized payment from the government, there might be some families who end up actually paying more than other families?
I think absolutely some families will pay more than other families, but those families may also have the capability of paying more. I think in any successful system, you have to consider what the capacity of the family is. You know, depending on how much the family earns, $10 a day could be a sneeze in a bucket, or it could actually destabilize their food security. And so I think even in trying to get down the amount that families have to contribute, trying to create a one-size-fits-all almost never works. I think is going to be, it's a solution that builds in that flexibility to accommodate for what families actually bring home and what their capacity to pay is, while also continuing to support the system without it being a 100% state-paid system, which is something that, you know, right now, the state, were we to ask them to do it tomorrow, could not afford to do. It's going to have to be a system that is built over time.
Dr. Lauren Ruth, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining And Another Thing today. I'm Dara Kennedy. A reminder, we welcome your comments. Call us, 800-639-9120.
Follow us on social media. We are at Hello and Another, or email us at andanotherthing@nepm.org. I'm Maya Schwader. Thanks for listening and have a great evening.